Hi, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. Welcome to another edition of What the Hal. I have always had this incredible respect for trees, largely because many of them are older than me, taller than me, and they're stately and they're big. And I just sort of have always had this incredible respect for these things, and they're everywhere. There are millions of them. Today, we're going to talk about trees with tree people. Let me have you start identifying yourselves. Why don't we start with you?
Sure. I'm Andy Lipkiss. I'm founder of Tree People.
And I'm Brian Reckert, director of forestry with Tree People.
All right. So the difference here is that Andy created this organization. And you deal with the hardcore work of dealing with the actual trees. So what I want to ask you first, Brian, is to explain to me what the impact of these incredible Southern California wildfires has been and what Tree People as an organization is doing about that. Because I don't know that a lot of people really understand that.
Sure. So the fires that we've been having lately have been very, very hot, and it's because of those flashy fuels. So it basically devastates everything. It burns everything to the ground. The good thing about our ecosystem, and we call it the chaparral, is it can be burnt down to the ground, and those roots are actually still alive. So what happens is we'll wait and see what Mother Nature does, and if those plants start to come back, then we will work around them, removing invasive species, things like that. Because if we go in right after the fire, like everybody wants to go right in, we could actually do more damage than good.
Andy, I want to understand why you started this group. What year was it,
1973. I actually started the work when I was 15 in 1970.
Why?
Why was because I was born and raised here, and I grew up in a very smoggy city. It hurt to breathe the air before we had Clean Air Act or anything like that, and I had to breathe steam after school. No disease, no lung disease.
No asthma, just, nothing like
no,
that.
No, just it. We all remember when we breathed it. We learned to not take a deep breath just to get by. My parents used to send me to the mountains, the San Bernardino Forest up by Lake Arrowhead and Big Bear, to get out of the smog and have a bit of summer where we could play and not be hurt. And I grew to love the forest. And when I turned 15, the U.S. Forest Service told us that smog was killing the trees there. They were literally breathing in that same burning pollution.
The trees were breathing it.
Yeah, they're our filter. They're our air conditioner, right? So they breathe in the chemicals, and it burns their lungs. The little, it's called the stomata. It's like little mouths that where the oxygen gets sucked in and all the air, and the caustic elements in the smog burns them and kills the chlorophyll, which is what makes their food. So we were told that the trees were dying so fast at that point that if nothing was done, the forest would be gone by the year 2000. And there was no government money. There was no program to save the forest. And they said, it's up to you kids. And we, because we loved the place, we started planting smog-resistant trees, native trees that just weren't dying in the smog. And it felt so good, I couldn't stop.
Well, what is a smog-resistant tree? Give me an example.
Well, our dominant species in the forests around here, ponderosa and Jeffrey pines. That's not the Santa Monica Mountains. These are the higher mountains where there's all those big, beautiful pine trees. Some of them are 800 years old. There's other very big, beautiful trees in much smaller populations, sugar pines, incense cedars.
I'm going to guess incense cedars smells like incense.
Yeah, it's that cedar wood that smells so good. So those were not dying. And basically, when they filtered this, they built these air chambers around the big trees and filtered the smog out. The ponderosas and Jeffreys got better, and the other ones just weren't dying. So they said, that's the ones to plant, and we started doing that. And when I say we, it was just some kids from my summer camp, and then, you know, there was no money, but I reached out to the public and said, hey, if you love the forest, we need help. We need, you know, if you want to contribute, great, but we need your bodies. And really nothing has changed. In that first year in 73, I tried to get some trees from the state of California. And because I was a kid, they didn't believe me. They started killing them because they thought, yeah, you don't know what you're doing. But I'd learned from them. I showed them that I had a plan where the trees would get planted and cared for. And that's never changed for us. And they went, wow, if you're going to take care of them, then you can succeed. They gave me a few of the trees they had left, and the And the LA Times did this little story about this kid, Andy versus the bureaucratic deadwood.
David and Goliath.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And what happened was that they said I needed 50 cents per tree, and thousands and thousands of kids sent 50 cents. Within 3 weeks, we had $10,000, and that was like it lit the rocket of tree people, and we've never stopped since.
You must have been absolutely blown away by that.
Yeah, I mean, sack of mail every day for 3-4 days. We brought the whole family together, my grandmothers, aunts, uncles. We were on the floor
opening
these
letters. And for those of you that don't know, mail is in an envelope, and they put a stamp on it and put an address, and it goes into whoever you're sending it to.
Yeah, and a sack is a bag that they carry mail in.
Yeah, right.
To this day, when I reflect back to that moment, that so many people opened their hearts and just taped 2 quarters or put in a dollar. That was crowdsourcing back in that day, and that launched this rocket. And Tree People has now engaged over 3 million people, planted millions of trees, and it's spread around the world.
It's around the world.
But we are based here. We are focused here, but we've helped groups start and plant all around the world in the past.
So let's dig down into the weeds a little bit. What I want to ask you is this. 73 to 83, 83 to 93, 93 to 2003 to 13, and then it's 1906. It's 46 years.
Yep.
And in 46 years, how many trees do you think you've had? I know you said millions, but can you ballpark exactly what you think that might be?
That I can. I can focus on 2 million. We ran a campaign to plant 1 million trees before the 84 Olympics in L.A. We have had more than as many as 3 million kids participate in our program, and every young person who comes to Tree People takes home a tree that another student has planted 6 months before, right? And so that's cool. But the numbers aren't as important as what they do, whether it's protecting a home or protecting our water supply, right? That opening segment you had on the show talked about the power of trees. They capture water.
And we're talking about, just for those who aren't aware, Fox 11 News In Depth is the television program which we were on, and we had a taped story that explained some of those things he's referring to.
Yeah, so the head of the Forest Service, who we cooperate with, he took me with him to an international meeting of forestry ministers to show the research that we were doing. And he told me, I asked him why he was so into watershed management and what that meant. And he said, well, when I was a young forest ranger, there was flooding up in Petaluma where he was. And I asked an old farmer, why? Was this new? And the farmer said, yes. He said, well, what's changed? And the farmer said, they took away all the sponges. And what he meant was they cut down all the oak trees. And I then asked the Forest Service to do the engineering calculations of the size of that sponge. And it turns out just a typical big old oak here in L.A., if it's 100 feet in diameter, the canopy, from one end of the branches to the other, the roots are even wider than that. The zone 5 feet deep under that tree that's been built with leaves and mulch for all these years, that space, that sponge, holds 120,000 gallons in a flash flood. Think about that in a 10 to 12 inch
tremendous.
Flash flood.
That's a tremendous amount.
And where, you know, you talk about living out in the valley, there's valley oaks, big oaks all over. They were all over the place. Well, you take one of those out and there's a storm, you're going to send a flood downstream. It may hurt somebody. So we plant to try to replace those protections. But it's not just a flood. We're losing that water from our water supply. So Los Angeles receives enough rainfall every year to meet half its needs, but we throw
Except
it away.
Except for the drought that we've had for 7 years.
Well, yeah. Like this year, we way exceeded normal.
We did well this year, but we haven't in the past 7 years.
We haven't. But the future projections is we may be getting the same or slightly more rain per year, but in far fewer storms. So they're going to be outsized. Our flood control system.
Right.
So
I want to add this, because long before the song Tie a Yellow Ribbon Around the Old Oak Tree, I've always had a healthy respect for trees. And I think it's because somewhere along the line, I came to the conclusion that trees were older than me. Mm. And that means that I should respect the elderly, and somehow I should respect trees because they're there, they're tall, they're stately. and they will protect me. They'll protect me from the heat that might absorb into my house, so they shelter. They may protect me from flying birds that may decide that they want to poop on me. I don't know. But I mean, you know, you sit back and you look at trees and you say, God, if I could just be a tree and know what that tree knows from all these years.
A lot of wisdom.
They're around forever. And I think that, you know, a healthy respect of trees is a good thing. And it seems like you have a bigger than healthy respect for trees. And what about you, Brian? I mean, you made a business out of this.
Well, it just keeps me outside and out of the office, not staring at a computer.
Yeah. But by nature or by trade, are you a horticulturalist? Are you a what are you exactly?
So I studied in Northern Colorado, and I'm a forest biologist, and I'm also certified through the ISA as a certified arborist.
So when we have issues like the drought-related bark beetles and things like that, that's really your area and what you really understand to be. Things that need to be attacked. So what is the biggest problem we have in Southern California with regard to trees?
I think it's that people aren't aware of their benefits and what they can actually do for their either community or their watershed, whether it be in the high elevation or low elevation. I think it's an education thing.
Is there anything that Andy hasn't mentioned yet that you want to add to the list of things that trees do for us? I mean, they bear fruit. We eat them.
Yeah.
They give us shelter. They give us shade. There's a lot of things. And they give us sap. Sap gets used for many things.
Yeah, gum arabic, all these things that are in our foods and everything else. Yeah. They do moderate the weather. And
how do they moderate the weather?
Well, when the trees are, first of all, grabbing that water, putting it in the ground, and then they slowly... You know, they suck the water back out, they evapotranspire. So that means they're evaporating the water that's in the ground.
Evapotranspire. That's so, one word?
Well, yeah. It's called evapotranspiration. And, that what they are doing is...
See, I've always believed that you learn something every day, and I just did.
Yeah, well...
I've never heard of that word before.
But it's hugely important because it's cooling. It is reducing temperatures in a city by as much as 10 to 12 degrees, which is important for energy savings. It's important now for saving lives, but not just cooling. That moisture goes up and recharges the clouds. So they found in places around the world where rain always falls on the coastal plain as it comes in from the ocean, right? Water cycle is what we're talking about. Water evaporates from the ocean, comes in as the clouds hit the land, they rain.
Yeah, the water comes back down again.
And what happens, and that allows forests to grow. But the rain stops at the mountains, right? Our mountains are less than 100 miles in from the coast. If those mountains lose their trees and the coastal plain loses its trees, the trees in that area are just like the ocean. They recharge the clouds and send the water further inland. Across Africa, where they cut their trees down, they then triggered drought after drought after drought and desertification, the creation of deserts. We, as people, didn't know that, and now we do, and it's all that much more important.
Those are what we call microclimates.
Climate and microclimate, right? Micro is literally micro. It can be neighborhood.
Smaller area.
Or city, yeah. Right. I mean, L.A. has over 24 different microclimate zones. And some trees can't move across them.
Brian, I want to give you guys a final thought here because this is a podcast, which means it could be heard anywhere in the world, and particularly across the United States. And trees are everywhere. There's different varieties of trees. There are different things about trees. Why should people – you talk about education. Why should people learn about the trees in their area as opposed to, say, the trees in another area? Why should you know your own – trees that are, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Native.
They're native indigenous. To the area, yeah.
Yeah. So, as Andy was saying, some trees cannot cross boundaries of states or even microclimates, as he was saying. So to be aware of what plants and trees are native to your ecosystem allows not just trees and plants, but it also, it's all connected. So then you get the birds, you get the bees, you get the, you know, the everything else that goes along with it.
Somehow I wasn't planning on this going to the birds and bees, but what the hell?
Yeah, why not? This is a podcast.
It's a podcast.
So think about, you know, these global migrations of birds and butterflies that, you know, they move across the world. They're like freeways of animals migrating. If you remove the native trees that they count on, you can actually break that freeway so they cannot
I don't think I've ever thought of it that way.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I mean, when you look at the whole world, and that's why a native tree is so important, because they don't massively change their migration routes. You're from, you know, you've been in the South, you know, the geese migration is only certain freeway lines across the world. If you take out that
Whales in the ocean do the same thing.
Right.
You know, they have their path. They know what it is.
Exactly.
It's intuitive to them. And so I guess it's the same with all nature.
Right.
Let me ask you, put a bow on this. And what do you, if people want to know more about Tree People or getting involved, or just give the information that
they need. Well, treepeople.org. You can find us on Instagram and on Facebook and online. We have so much material. So if you want to volunteer, we've got 16 events this weekend. We have events all the time. There's maybe 60 Tree People staff, but there are over 10,000 volunteers, and you could be one of them. You can try it for a day. You can get trained to be a citizen forester so you can green your neighborhood and get lots of respect. There's all kinds of things that people can do. We are a nonprofit organization, so
it means you're a 501c3.
501c3, and we rely on donations. Just like when I was that kid starting, had people not put that 50 cents in, and now, you know, maybe it's $5 or $500 or $5,000, and we would take $5 million. That is how we are able to keep going.
Nice try. but I'll put in my 2 cents.
It works.
Well, I'll put one penny, another penny, and tape them to an envelope and stick it in that mail that you talked about, right? All right, bottom line is, if you want to be involved,
treepeople.org is the best way to go. And we have online a book that we wrote called The Simple Act of Planting a Tree. It's 200 pages because it's not simple. It's a citizen forester's guide to healing your neighborhood, your city, and your world. We train you in that. If you want to go through our citizen forester course, that book is free online on our website in our publications page. You can learn a lot. And we got great videos in Spanish and in English.
I think the thing I would want to say, and you could just see if you double down on this, but again, I've always had healthy respect for trees. I've always felt that the trees were there longer than me, and I always felt that they were taller than me, and I always felt if they fell, they could really hurt me. And so I've never really been one to, in fact, there was a time when people were going up and down the street saying, the city's going to get rid of the trees. And I would say, over my dead body. You know, I'll handcuff myself to the, this is my 60s coming back out on me. I'll handcuff myself to the trees. I really wouldn't have done that. But the thing is that that's a feeling I had, that don't hurt my trees. Because they're my trees, they're in my yard, or they're on my parkway, and they're part of my family. So that's a healthy respect for trees?
Yeah, you know, wisdom.
We need everybody to think that way.
Yeah, and they're carrying that wisdom, and they try to teach it. There's a lot to learn from those big old guys and gals.
Okay. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for listening. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please do. And you know those stars? Give us 5. Okay, 4.5 will be fine. What the hell, right? Thanks for joining us. See you next time.